program is paid content from the Organization for Your Children. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of Free Your Children and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Kennedy Broadcasting Company, LLC, its owners, and management. Welcome in to Free Your Children, sharing truth and love about education. And here's your host, Tiffany Boyd.
Hello, welcome to Free Your Children on WKOM 101.7. I am your host, Tiffany Boyd, and our mission here at Free Your Children is to share the truth and love about education. There's a battle raging for the souls of our nation's children. I hope this ministry equips you for battle. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. Ephesians 6, 10 through 11. I want to thank Safe Storage for sponsoring today's show. If you have storage needs and you're in the Middle Tennessee area, you can find Safe Storage at safestoragetn.com. I also want to thank our sponsor, John Paul Financial Services. They've been in business for more than 30 years, offering retirement planning, basic and advanced legacy planning, as well as small or large-term life insurance. For a free consultation on how a living trust or a guaranteed retirement plan may help you, call 931-979-6170 or by email, jplivingtrusttn.com. John Paul Financial Service, sound solution for a secure future. Also, thank you to our friends of Free Your Children who help make this radio show possible. If you would like more information about sponsoring the Free Your Children radio show, send me an email at freeyourchildren@gmail.com, and I can get that sponsorship package to you. If you would like more information on Free Your Children in general, check out our new and improved website. We're so excited to be launching all of the improvements that we have made. You can find that at freeyourchildren.com. We have launched a toolkit. It's the FYC toolkit, and I think you'll find some great things there that can help answer your questions, and you can go and check that out, and I hope that you will. You can also find me over on X, Telegram, Signal, Facebook, Gmail. I'm also a monthly contributor to the Borough Pulse. That's BoroughPulse.com. There you can access my author page and read all of the articles that I have written to date about education. We are also getting ready to launch some things over on Rumble. So a lot going on. And excitingly, this has been a very busy week. So Tuesday, I was in the House all day. I gave testimony in the House in opposition to Governor Lee's voucher bill. You can access that clip over on my Free Your Children Facebook page. Then the very next day, we were back again to the Senate, where the bill was supposed to be heard, and I gave testimony in the Senate as well. Again, you can access my Senate testimony. It was a big game of cat and mouse. So these bills were filed as caption bills. The language wasn't released until the very last minute. It was very interesting to see this unfold, and I will be going into great detail in a coming show about exactly what that looked like. It did pass out of the House K through 12 subcommittee. And the Senate rolled the vote until next week. So we will be back in the Senate again next week in opposition to this particular voucher bill. They've changed the numbers on the bill, and I have all that information over on For Your Children. If you have questions about that, please reach out to me. But the Senate did confirm yesterday that homeschoolers have not been taken out of the bill. So there's been some misinformation about that. They did confirm they are in the bill, that the governor did not plan on removing Category 4 schools, that they wanted this to be a universal voucher plan. So if you have questions about that and you would like more information, just feel free to contact me at freeyourchildren@gmail.com. Also, I have a list of the senators that are on the Education Committee. I encourage you to reach out to them and ask them to vote no on this bill. We have a guest with us today that I've known for quite some time. I'm excited to have her. Her name is Connie Reguli. Connie, welcome.
Ah, thank you. And so good to be here with you today. We have so much to talk about.
We do. You've been beating the halls of the Capitol too, hadn't you?
I sure have. I've been trying to chase down three or four bills. The most ridiculous one and the scariest one, of course, is all the parental rights arguments and bills that are going around, and it's very, very dangerous. So I'm looking forward to talking about
it. Yes, absolutely. That's the reason, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on today. I had written about parental rights bills last month for the Borough Pulse. It was the last article that I had written, and you can access that again over on the Borough Pulse, and that was my concern.
Mm-hmm.
This particular bill, the one that I was discussing, was the one that Pody had sponsored.
Mm-hmm.
And I also talked about the Gino Bolso bill, and we're going to get into that, I know, as well, Connie, but I was really concerned about the fact that this bill enumerated parental rights. Now, before we get into all this, tell our listeners a little bit about your background first so that they will understand that you actually do know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, so, you know, for three decades, I have worked in the court system with families all across the state of Tennessee. I've probably been in 45 of our 95 counties, walked right through those courtroom doors through the richest and the poorest counties that we have. I also have many times been to the Court of Appeals, which means that I have to dig into the law and study the law. So I go back to the beginning of DCS, 1995, and has followed the case law as well as the statutory changes. In addition, I have been to federal court and tried to carve out parental rights in the federal courts, which although it is a challenge, and we'll talk about this some more, the Tennessee and the United States Constitution has determined already we have parental rights. And so, and again, I don't want a spoiler here, so we'll get into the bills here in just a minute. But I also do have a grassroots organization called the Family Forward Project. We have over 19,000 families across the country who are particularly concerned about the child welfare system and making reforms there. So we go to Washington, we work together. So yeah, I'm a pretty busy girl in the whole role of parental rights, just like you are in education.
Absolutely. And our organizations, my ministry, your organization, the work that we're doing overlaps.
Absolutely.
Yes. And so that was the reason why a close friend of ours decided to make that introduction. And I'm thankful for that because she was right. What we're doing, you know, parental rights touches everything.
Absolutely.
It touches every aspect of everything that happens, including, you know, education. So let's dig in a little bit. Tell our listeners which bills that you've been at the Capitol and that you have concerns with, and let's just pick those apart.
Okay, so first of all, I was doing some bill chasing this week, particularly on House Bill 1767 and House Bill 2404. Now, a lot of my parental rights work has to do with government overreach when it comes to child welfare, truancy issues, anything a juvenile gets in court, etc. So 2404 was a bill that they changed something that has been Tennessee law for two decades. And that is when DCS comes in and files a petition for dependency and neglect, the court is supposed to be making a finding of the status of the child as of the time they actually do the hearing instead of when the petition is filed. And there's a very specific reason for this, because when juvenile courts and DCS were created back in 1995, they were intended to be remedial in nature and not to be punitive. And it was to go in, and if a family had an environmental neglect issue, that there could be some resolution to that. Services could be provided, and you could dismiss this petition and put the family back together. So this, but now DCS doesn't like that, because families do get better and they do heal from the time of the filing of the petition. So they specifically went in and asked that it be at the date of the petition. And the reason, in again, is it gives them more control, because they can do an adjudication as of that date. And I know I may throw out some legal terms. I try to give them in the best lay description that I can, but I know it gets a little bit confusing. The other one is 1767, which is a termination of parental rights bill. And I'll also tell you, I've been very involved over the years with the American Bar Association and the parental representation. And generally, nationally, the attorneys in the legal field feel like we're doing it wrong. I mean, we are too quick to sever parental rights forever. And this one does one very serious thing, is it reverses the burden of proof, where a parent has to prove they're innocent instead of the state proving they're guilty. Mm-hmm. And I gave the analogy in front of one of the committees, and I says, it's like a court finding that a bank was robbed in your neighborhood last week, and you happen to be in the neighborhood, so unless you can prove yourself innocent, you're going to jail. And And that's really where this is. And there are some situations where small children have some complex medical issues, et cetera. And there actually was a Tennessee Supreme Court case last year that I was involved with. And they said, well, they didn't, you know, the child did have some injuries. They tried to blame it on the parents. They didn't have any proof, and the child had been in the hands of other people. So we're still kind of fighting that. There's another important part of that bill. This has actually been part of the law for a while. It's been used a little bit and not a lot, but I really fear with where we're going, which we're going to talk about the social workers in the schools, mm-hmm. but it is a bill that allows for the diagnosis of a potential future psychological event, providing that DCS can bring an expert to reasonably expect or predict such an event. And those conclusions are, of course, made by experts who are paid by DCS or paid by the state. Mm-hmm. So it is a predictive psychological event. And I just know this is going to go crazy now. So those are the two DCS bills I chased. And then I chased the three parental rights bills. You mm-hmm. mentioned two of them. Mm-hmm. The other one was the Hale bill, which was SB 2749, which is the one that we're actually now going to have to chase because the other two are out. Mm-hmm. Very similar language. And we'll get more into the nitty gritty of that.
Right. Let's discuss a little bit. Enumeration of parental rights. Explain that in layman's terms and why that's dangerous, Connie.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to tell you that the word unless is in here five times.
Okay.
The word otherwise, otherwise, blanket consent,
yep.
otherwise authorized, or in an institution of higher education, which is an area I really mm-hmm. want to talk about. The other thing is there's this language, except as otherwise provided mm-hmm. by statute, court order, or some other nebulous thing. So really, not only are we enumerating, which mm-hmm. means we're saying, okay, you have a right to educational decisions, you have a right to medical decisions. Okay, so we're enumerating those, which is not good. It's not the most frightening thing. The most frightening thing to me is that the otherwise.
Right.
The otherwise. Mm-hmm. So basically what this is saying is you have parental rights unless the government has decided mm-hmm. otherwise. And I do want to also bring up something very important as to what is a parent. Remember mm-hmm. we went around what is
right.
a woman?
Yes.
What is a woman? Well, what is a parent?
I saw that in these bills. Yes.
It's going to be the next question. And here's what a parent is. A parent is a biological, legal, or adoptive parent or mm-hmm. an individual who's being granted decision-making authority over the child under state law.
So anyone that they decide, the state decides, it can act as a parent is a parent.
Yeah, and it defines government decision, or it defines decision-making as the power granted by the state. Mm. To a non-parent to make decisions for the child. And then mm-hmm. government entity is also mm-hmm. defined in here, as if we didn't know, as any branch, mm-hmm. any branch, department, agency, commission, or instrumentality of the state government. This is not a parental rights bill at all.
Right. I think that a lot of times people don't read the bill, as we found out. We knew this, but it really hit home Tuesday when we were in the House, because I would say the vast majority of those legislators had not read the wording of the bill they were getting ready to vote for, because they had not been given the bill. And so the general public had been promised 7 days to have ample opportunity to review the bill. We didn't get that. That was not granted. And I heard some of the legislators saying that they weren't even given 24 hours. Yet they voted on it, and it passed. They voted to pass it. And it was voted out of committee. Mm-hmm. So the devil's in the details, right, Connie?
Oh, absolutely. And it's similar on this. I had reviewed the Pody bill. I do want to say this. It was very interesting. I'd reviewed Pody, Hale, and Halsey's bills. Mm-hmm. And I actually wrote an article for the Tennessee Conservative trying mm-hmm. to untangle those. Mm-hmm. And at the last minute, Mark Pody did do an amendment. Mm-hmm. And he did this two-page bill that basically said, you have parental rights. And he took out a lot of the government stuff, but he yes. still left that very dangerous language
right.
that a parent could be or another individual.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we had to have a parental rights bill, I was kind of like, okay, what can I do to sort of help get that in the chute instead mm-hmm. of this other stuff? But this bill, this Hale bill, was amended at the last minute, right?
Oh,
and they
yeah.
do the little amendment package, which uh-huh. if you're going there to speak, you never see.
Exactly.
Because you've looked ahead of time. You've
right.
tried to look at the dashboard. Sometimes they don't even put it up on the dashboard.
Correct.
And all this other language. language was added to it.
Yes, and I had an opportunity to read the amendment for the Pody bill, and I say this. A government big enough to tell you what your rights are is a government large enough to take those rights away. And so that's why I'm always concerned when we see these bills that enumerate those rights. It's a huge concern. And then again, you have to read the bill.
Well, and I'm going to tell you this as a lawyer who's worked for 30 years and had my nose in those green books mm-hmm. day after day after day. Here's what happens when and I said this right to some legislators. I said, when the General Assembly codifies it and puts it in the Green Book, mm-hmm. I can guarantee you, y'all are going to come back every year and mess with it. And that's exactly from my area, which is the DCS, CPS issue. Mm-hmm. It was originally intended to be remedial mm-hmm. and to be reunification oriented. And they have chopped and chopped and chopped away at it. So even just putting it in the code,
yes.
putting it in the Green Books and, you know, so people, and I'm going to say this, I'm going to assume our audience is actually where I was before I started law school, which mm-hmm. is they don't even know what a code is.
Right.
Right. And so in law, you have codes, which means that's what the legislature writes down. They put it in what is published as a green book. Now, of course, you can get it online, but that's what the legislature does. And then the courts take those codes and then they interpret them and they mm-hmm. rule on them and they tweak them and they mm-hmm. make their own decisions. And then, of course, agencies have their own rules and regulations.
Exactly.
Which is a whole nother thing.
Yes. And then, you know, I think people need to realize that wording is very easily amended.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's a big concern of mine when they start saying, well, we can write an amendment to do this and to do that. Well, you know, as we've seen time and time again, once it goes on the books, it's very easy to amend that language. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you have to try to stop the Trojan horse before it gets, you know, made into law. Would you agree with that?
Well, I do. And I want to talk about this parent thing. And as I said, I've been in federal court fighting civil rights cases for parental rights. And this individual who has been granted decision making, now, that could be some people. I spoke to Alliance for Defending Freedom. Do you know them?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, they supported this yep. bill, by the way.
We were actually, when we were there on Tuesday for the House, we actually had a conversation with them. And I knew that they were there peddling these parental rights bills. And we expressed our concern.
Well, and I was talking to him in the hallway, and I said, what is this individual who's been granted decision-making authority? He goes, well, don't you think guardians should have rights? I'm like, no, I don't. They're not parents, mm-hmm. right? They are not parents. And again, this is that type of legislative language that can morph into anything.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, the devil is in the details, and it opens the door to allowing things that we're seeing that our school system, our educational system is lining up for right now. And I know that we're going to get into this in detail, but let's talk about how our schools are being loaded with social workers, SRO officers, and why we are concerned about that. I know we're going to have to take a break in a minute, so I know we're not really going to have time to go deeply into this, but are you concerned?
Oh, yeah. And I want to grab onto this individual with decision-making authority
yes.
just before we take a break
Absolutely.
And leave this subject. You know, this can be, once you get into the juvenile court system with a child, it can be a paternity action, a custody action, a dependency action. I have seen courts give decision-making authority over doctors.
Wow.
To treat a child with biologics, which is made out of human blood, over the religious objections of the family for a non-emergency situation. Mm-hmm. So that individual could be a doctor, mm-hmm. could be a teacher, right? It could be a counselor to give. I mean,
stop. You're telling me that a teacher could make the decision that a judge would override a doctor?
No. A judge
yes.
can grant specific, because we've enumerated all
right,
these rights,
exactly.
right?
Yes.
A judge could grant specific rights to somebody other than a parent, and it might
right.
just be one of those rights. So
right.
it's not just necessarily somebody who's got the child
right,
and who's
exactly.
caring for the child. They could tell the teacher
right.
that the judge is going to give decision-making authority over the teacher or the principal
right.
to on that child's education.
Wow. So it subverts the parental rights.
It dissects them.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like I might give you the right to dress your child and feed them breakfast.
Right.
But as soon as they hit the schoolroom door, yep. I'm going to give your teacher, your principal, all the parental rights that are associated with education.
Right. In loco parentis.
Oh, absolutely. Our parens par tree.
Yes. Explain that to our listeners.
Well, you know, this theory, I don't know if I have time before our break here.
In layman's terms.
Yeah, okay. Wrap it up. We'll come back.
Yes. We're gonna take a break. We'll be right back. Join us right back here.
Hey, this is George Plaster, and for the very best in sports, keep your dial on 101.7 FM WKOM.
Hi, I'm Robert Rogers at Parks Motor Sales Buick GMC.
And I'm Michael Parks Lawrence at Parks Motor Sales Buick GMC.
Together, we're Mr. Bobby Parks' grandsons, and we run his dealership, and we are glad to be part of our local community.
Being family-owned and operated, we invest heavily in our community.
We do things like sports teams, schools, bands, you name it. We try to help everybody we can.
The reason why we do this is because we all love this community.
So come do business with us, your neighbors, at Parks Motor Sales in Columbia, Tennessee, right off Nashville Highway, or at parksmotorsales.com.
Hello, I'm Barbara Lincoln with Holland's Pharmacy. You may have heard our previous commercials about compression hosiery that we carry at Holland's Pharmacy. Well, we've recently expanded into a full line of knee braces, back, wrist, ankle, and other support wear. We will gladly help you get just the right fit for these items and, of course, special order items to ensure the proper fit. Come see us at Holland's Pharmacy, 1608 Hatcher Lane, or call us at 931-388-4233. 388-4233.
Hi, I'm Steve, the garbage man. Have you been hauling your own garbage to the convenience center? Are you tired of doing it? Does your work schedule keep you from hauling it off regularly? Is your teenage son not taking it off like he promised when he got his driver's license? Do you have something better to do on Saturday? If any of these questions strike home to you, call the garbage man at 931-540-0919 and your problem will be solved.
Do you suffer from knee pain? Is it painful to walk or perform your day-to-day activities? If so, we have great news at the Dr. Gill Center. We can relieve your knee pain fast and easy with no downtime and no surgery. The FDA has approved a new non-surgical treatment for knee pain, and it's covered by most major insurance, including Medicare. This treatment has helped millions of people across the nation. Call today to see if you qualify for a free consultation and get back to a pain-free life. 615-551-9224.
As a former small business owner here in Columbia, I know how important it is to stay connected to clients and the community. That's why at Caledonian Financial, we make every effort possible to give back to this community that has given so much to us. We do this by supporting our local schools, nonprofit organizations, and community outreach programs, to name a few. We are so proud of our town. This is Blair Parks Hickman with Caledonian Financial in historic downtown Columbia.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through NBC Securities Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
For the love of the climb. For the love of the fall. For the love of knowing your kid's laughter is the sweetest music there is. For the love of Tennessee. Travel safe. Brought to you by the Tennessee Department of Tourist Development, the Tennessee Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Hello, it's Tiffany Boyd with Free Your Children, and we are excited about our new home here at WKOM FM 101.7. Tune in on Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 7 p.m. as we share the truth in love about education. We will be discussing parental rights, constitutional rights, and educational rights, and we hope you will join us. You can also subscribe to the Free Your Children podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, welcome back to Free Your Children, and we have a guest with us today, Connie Reguli. Connie, welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
We were just speaking before we took a break about, what were we speaking about?
Parens patrie.
Could you put that in layman's terms for our listeners?
Yeah. So the reason we were bringing it up is because of this quote unquote parental rights bill. Mm-hmm. They call it rights and responsibilities. And as we discussed earlier, this is really a government grab. This is really the government saying you are going to have these rights unless we say otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so the whole concept of parens patri is that the government is the legal protector. Mm-hmm. That's the basic, easiest way. It actually didn't even start legally with children because nobody ever used to litigate children back in the 1600s. So it had to do more with cows and slaves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe even I know the U.S. government has used it for antitrust situations, but it's developed over the years to be sort of the word for the government protecting the children more than the parents do. So that's what we're facing here. This is really a parens patri doctrine, if you ask me.
Right. And so I've spoken and written and been interviewed extensively about the medicalization of our school system. Mm-hmm. So we know that at the federal level, parental consent has been removed to reduce the administrative burden. Don't you love that?
Oh, yes.
So schools can access Medicaid without parental consent and bill the schools to collect monies from Medicaid in the state of Tennessee. That's TennCare. Why is that concerning, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, this is, and of course, under this whole, you know, under this parental rights bill, I'll say they're doing two different things. They're taking, they're creating a whole new section in the Green Books called Title 36, Chapter 8, which again is frightening because as soon as they create this whole section within the code, they go in and they amend it. Mm-hmm. But what they have also done is they are taking and adding to Title 63, which is more of the medical. That's where we're getting into the medical issues and how, and this is where specifically it says, except as provided otherwise by statutory law, case law, or court order. So, you know, the government entity has already been given all of that relief by what you're saying with the federal government and the federal direction. So there really is no medical parental right at all.
Exactly, which is scary because, again, we were speaking about, we know during the summer study session that there was a big push to provide incentives and forgive student loan debt for medical professionals to be able to put them in the schools. And we know our schools are being loaded up with social workers, and we know they're being loaded up with, and these are master's level social workers as well. So what are your feelings on that?
Yeah, yeah. And I want to, on this bill where I was talking about in Title 63, a person can be an individual, a corporation, or any other legal or commercial entity. So giving the right, so this bill is giving the right not just to the medical professional, but to any other corporation. So you are correct. And this issue with social workers in schools, we do know that at least a third of the reports to DCS come from the schools.
Right.
And so now we have children who have these social workers in school. And I know I actually have a couple grandchildren that are still in public elementary school. And, you know, they have told me all I have to do is hold my hand up and say, I need to speak to Miss Kathy or whatever her name is. And they immediately allow the child to go down and speak to a therapist. Now, you know, that therapist then can not only interrogate the child and go as far as they want to, but they can then use that as a report to DCS. And just like I was talking about earlier about this whole predictive psychological event that may occur sometime in the future, that is where the mental health field is going. And I have seen them do that.
Yes. And this was all part of Common Core back in the day. It all leads to this. And we got into a lively discussion in the hallway yesterday with someone in the governor's cabinet, I guess you could say, in his department of education about this very thing and how it was connected to Common Core. And people don't understand that. But this is a very, very slippery slope because there's a huge push, not just in the state of Tennessee, but nationwide, to diagnose as many children as possible as at risk. And I fully believe the reason for that, well, there are a lot of reasons for that. One is if everyone is labeled as at risk, then when they get older, and of course now all their information is going on these badges that the kids are wearing. And so there's a record. They're using blockchain technology. It never disappears. You know, if they have been dinged for some type of mental health issue while they're in school, and this follows them throughout their life, when they get old enough to purchase a firearm, guess what?
Yep.
There's
yep.
no reason to ever have to file another red flag bill, because a couple of decades of this and diagnosing all these poor children is at risk via the mental health pipeline, we're going to have an unarmed populace.
Well, and I'll tell you, I'm going to flash back to last legislative session mm-hmm. and HB 1214.
Oh, yeah. Free Your Children was on that one like flies on honey.
Well, and we were, we were on it too.
Yes.
And, you know, we did get that silenced, but
yes.
that language, that at-risk language
yes.
is right in the middle of that bill. And
absolutely.
Basically it said that if a child was deemed to be at risk,
yes.
the state could take that child and put them in a boarding school.
Absolutely. And I believe that that's where we're headed, even with the voucher legislation, the amendment that came out. I was reading through that, and I was getting vibes from HB 1214 with charter schools and identifying at-risk kids. And I was actually having a conversation while I was on the way to the station this morning, and I fully believe that the well-being child check, it never went away. I think there's a misnomer that we defeated that. We did not defeat that. As a matter of fact, our governor has partnered with Janet Ayers from the Ayers Foundation to advance mental health and bring more mental health professionals into our schools. And she actually sat on that well-being child check task force. And so I'm seeing this happen in other states. Last week, I interviewed Israel Wayne, and he was discussing what was going on in Michigan. Not long after that show aired this week, now I'm seeing that they're pushing for well-being child checks in Michigan. And it's pervasive in the U.S. It's happening. They're calling for it in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I've had multiple states contacting me as I was walking into the station. Can you please highlight our state? This is what they're trying to do in terms of government overreach to the homeschool community or to the private school community. So this is definitely a nationwide push. And you're right. Those statements that they made about at risk, they were so wide and broad. I mean, it literally would apply to and could apply to any child. The socioeconomically disadvantaged, that means poor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you were on a free and reduced lunch, it would mean
single parents,
domestic violence. If you were at risk, if your child was at risk of abuse, neglect, or disability, that could mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, dyslexia, ADHD, you know, hearing impaired. I mean, who knows? Who knows what they are going to try to, you know, categorize that as? And then of family dysfunction. If the child came from a home that was dysfunctional, the family was dysfunctional. Well, I don't know any family that isn't dysfunctional, right?
Yeah.
Who's making these determinations? It was a very slippery slope, and it went on and spoke about truancy, chronically absent. I mean, it just went on and on. It was such a wide berth of what they were going to target these kids for being at risk, and then they could potentially earn a bed in these at-risk boarding charter facilities.
Yeah, so let me tell you, under that HB 2404 that I spoke about earlier, there was a whole nother section in there that got amended out.
Uh-huh.
And here's what it said. This is, again, under the DCS authority. It uh-huh. said that under the category of want and suffering, which is a determination for dependency and neglect where the state can take your child, it said that if a child suffered from a mental health or substance abuse issue, which the parent could not provide resources at no fault of their own, that the state could then make a finding of want and suffering and take the child.
Wow.
Wow is mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, it's scary. And I think that parents... Well, obviously, most parents, I'm certain, don't understand the gravity of this. They don't even know it's mm-hmm. happening, number one. I think that, you know, for so many years, parents, you know, it's just considered a fact of life that when your child turns a certain age, the little yellow school bus comes and picks them up and carts them off to school, and everything is going to be fine. But I really encourage parents, you need to start reading legislation and watching these issues as they are unfolding, because there is a definite grab for our nation's children. And I know that may sound crazy or far out there, but if you start reading legislation and you start doing your research, you will see that that is clearly the path and the trajectory that we are on, not just in the state of Tennessee, but across the nation.
Well, and there is a real goal with DCS to terminate parental rights and adopt children out. Mm-hmm. And it's all money driven. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just like much of the education is money driven. So once DCS captures a child and takes them hostage and puts them in a home of strangers, they get Title IV E money. Now, you know, they always beat me up and they're like, oh, but we have to protect abused children. Well, but you know, I'm just going to tell you the truth. They don't really want the children who are severely abused and been starved and locked in closets because they do not have the caliber of foster parent who really has the critical training skills that have master's degrees in child development or psychology. They really want those children who are just in marginalized or vulnerable families, those mm-hmm. cute little kids that they can, and half of them are under six, by the way. So,
wow.
You know, those cute little kids that they can take, and then the state gets money under Title IV-E, and then they adopt them out to the foster parents, and the foster parent continues to get that money mm-hmm. until the child turns 18 right. under the Adoption and Safe Families Act. And I pulled some of those numbers and showed them to state legislators because they have no idea mm-hmm. that this is going on. I call it the secret welfare program that nobody talks about. Right now in the state of Tennessee alone, it is $11 million a month for the post-adoption welfare checks that are going out. And the foster care money is at about $4 million a month. And so, you know, they're on this big push. We got to take children away from these people who are abusing substances. We can't get them clean. You know, these mothers are addicted. We can't get them taken care of. And I spoke to a legislator yesterday and I said, where does this end? Mm-hmm. What, you know, what are we going to do? We're just going to say if you make less than $40,000 a year and you can't find a job, we're just going to take your kids.
Right.
I mean, where does this end? I don't know.
It's scary, and I'm seeing it. I'm seeing the availability of DCS being able to step in, mm-hmm. Expand tremendously through what they're doing in the school systems. So, you know, I had spoken previously about an issue in Kingsport, Tennessee schools, where they were going to, and you touched on this, where they were going to be allowed to interrogate children without parents present. Mm-hmm. And if the child refused to subject themselves to this interrogation, then they would be subject to disciplinary action. So this was the board in that particular school district. Tell me what you know about that, as far as our children being interrogated without their parents present. And when I say this, this is what I mean. If little Billy is in school and he makes a statement, I'm sick of school, like the little boy, the guy, little guy in Farragut that made the statement, you know, he was tired of being at school and made a statement along the lines of, I'm just going to go and get a plane and crash it into the school so we don't have to come back. Mm-hmm. So then someone overhears that and goes and tells an employee at the school that they have a concern. So this child is then hauled into the principal's office or the counselor's office, wherever it may be. And the school system proceeds to interrogate this child. Let's talk about that.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, and this is one of the things I have tried to fight through civil rights litigation. You know, there was a court ruling out in the Ninth Circuit at one point many years ago before California was as liberal as it is now. But, you know, a long time ago, a court did make a finding that you cannot come in and interrogate a child without parental consent. However, it happened to be a private school. Mm-hmm. And in that opinion, they even kind of said, well, it might be different if it's a public school. So this has been a challenge all along. And there's also been litigation in the past about, do children have Miranda rights, right? Mm-hmm. Like, uh-huh. Are the children entitled to have a neutral person there? Probably 6-7 years ago, when Sheila Butt was still in the legislature, she proposed a bill that said if they were going to interrogate a child in school, they had to either record it or have a third party, a neutral party present. And DCS came in and lobbied against it. Mm-hmm. So what we have now in this brand new parental rights legislation uh-huh. is that the parent has a right to consent before any government entity makes a video or voice recording of a child, unless the video or voice recording is made during or as part of, and then one of them is law enforcement interaction
right.
or forensic interview by criminal or DCS. Mm-hmm. Now, but let me also point out that this legislation does not even touch the situation where they just take the child and interrogate them without recording it.
Right, exactly.
Which I know happens.
Right.
I know happens.
And then when you said unless, read that again, unless.
Unless the recording is made during or as part of. And then particularly it says a law enforcement interaction.
Right. That's what I wanted to get to right there, because we're putting SRO officers now in all the schools, and there was a big push wanting to put them in private schools as well. So I was actually asked by a representative, do you agree with what we did putting more SRO officers in the schools? And I said, absolutely not. And they just had an incredulous reaction. Like, I cannot believe that you wouldn't think that that was okay. This is why I don't think that's okay.
Yeah.
Because they have so much liberty with the children. And what's happening is they are the ones in a lot of these cases that are there present when this interrogation without the parents are being present happens. And these kids are being remanded into DCS custody.
Yeah, you know, and children, you get children in a room like that and you isolate them and interrogate them.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't take much for them to be intimidated. Yes. I don't think they should ever be interviewed by anybody in a uniform.
Right.
That's intimidating. Mm-hmm. I know that DCS has told children things like, you know, if you don't tell us the truth, you may never see your mommy again.
Yes.
You know, yeah. DCS has taken children from the school.
Well, yeah, that has actually, I have had numerous parents call me, and that has happened to them. And by the time they got to the school, they had no idea where their child was. They would not tell them where their children were. They were either trying to process them in to DCS, and in some cases, DCS happened to be full. It was on a Friday. Then the children were remanded to some juvenile justice center and held for 72 hours. The parents had no, and these were all on accusations.
Exactly.
It's just accusations. So they're being handcuffed, placed in a police car, and taken in and either processed into DCS or put into police custody. As a parent, I cannot imagine arriving at the school, my child being gone, and I have no idea where they are, who's got them.
Yeah.
I mean, how horrifying. And parents, if you're listening to this, there is a reality here that could potentially happen to your child. It can happen to any child.
Well, and I do want to say, you know, I talked about children having Miranda rights. I mean, here's another issue. Adults have the right to bond, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I want to talk particularly about teenagers. And we all know how, you know, difficult teenagers are to raise sometimes. But, you know, if a child gets arrested for trespassing, the juvenile court can actually hold them for 72 hours. They don't even have a right to make bond.
Wow.
And, you know, I've seen children who have been picked up and incarcerated, and make no mistake about it, these juvenile detention centers are jails.
Yes.
Okay. They have big, huge metal doors that clang shut. They're total solid concrete. The children have to sleep on concrete with a little padded mat. Make no mistake, you are incarcerating and jailing a child. So that's just another place where this is opening up the opportunity to take these children and incarcerate them.
That's just absolutely horrifying. How did we get here? I mean, how are we here in this nation where this is happening to our children and people are just sitting idly by? Our legislators are passing legislation that's advancing this and growing this beast. It is absolutely horrifying. And if you're listening to this, reach out to your legislators.
Absolutely. And, you know, that we got on the Trust Your Government. So, and before we take a break, I do want to put this out there for the listeners. I am going to give you the House sponsors' email address, if you don't mind.
Great.
Okay, so Jeremy Faison is the House sponsor. This is on the calendar for Tuesday. March the 5th. So we need to, I saw him in the hallway.
The bill number, Connie?
Yeah, sure. It is.
This is in the House. House, okay. House Bill.
2936.
House Bill 2936 on the calendar.
And here is the email address for Jeremy Faison. It is rep.jeremy@capitals.tn.gov. Phone number 615-741-6871. Call and leave him a message and send him an email.
And tell him no.
Tell him no. Tell him this is a government grab. And he hates DCS. I've talked to him several times about that. So I'm not sure that he understands the impact this is going to have.
Yes, that's what I'm finding when we're dealing with our legislators, is they're either ignorant, and that's not a derogatory term, that simply means you don't understand, or you're willfully ignorant. And it's time for us to take a break. We'll be right back. Hope you'll join us.
This is Jumpin' Joe Wiley, and you're listening to 101.7 WKOM Columbia.
Alert, alert! Columbia Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram has a huge announcement. We're expanding our service center to get you in and out quicker than ever. That's right, 5 new service bays to get your vehicle back on the road. Don't drive a Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, or Ram. It doesn't matter. Our certified technicians are trained to work on all makes or models. More service, less time. Only at Columbia Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. Family owned and operated.
You can count on us.
Hi, Terry Tillis from Tillis Jewelry. When you think of diamonds, what do you think of? Rare, precious, timeless, sparkles like the sun. They're timeless and nothing like them on earth. Then do you think, where do I buy local to buy the perfect ring? Maybe a diamond pendant or earrings or maybe a new diamond band. Look no further. Tillis Jewelry carries all your diamond and jewelry needs. Stop by and see our wonderful collection. And remember, if you don't know your diamonds, know your jeweler. Tillis Jewelry, downtown Columbia.
American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning is built to a higher standard, so you can focus on the problems in your life that actually matter, like the stair that only creaks when everyone else in the house is asleep. American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, built to a higher standard.
Call Davis Heating and Cooling at 931-388-2090 for all your home comfort needs. Davis Heating and Cooling is your local American Standard dealer and proudly serves the Maury County area. Find Davis Heating and Cooling online and on Facebook or call today, 388-2090.
Debbie Matthews grew up and lives in beautiful Columbia, Tennessee. As a realtor, she is well-versed in homes, neighborhoods, development, and schools. She wants to share her love of her home state with others to help them find just the right place to raise a family, open a business, or develop a dream. From luxury listings to land, she can handle it all. She is the current leading producer, Nashville Realty Group. Contact Debbie Matthews Realtor at 615-476-3224. That's 615-476-3224.
This is Elk Kennedy. A few years ago, my wife Mary Susan and I decided to redo our study. I wanted the same comforting earth color green my grandmother had in her study when I was growing up. We didn't even have a sample. Mary Susan went to see Zeke Maddox at Columbia Paint Wall Cover. He had my grandmother's color card on file from 1959. Today, her great-great-grandchildren play and laugh under that comforting green. Columbia Paint Wall Cover, Zeke Maddox, 931-388-2806.
Columbia's own 8th Annual Mid-State Classic Collegiate Softball Tripleheader returns on April 2nd at the Ridley Sports Complex. Columbia Central versus Spring Hill at 10 a.m. Then it's Columbia State versus UT Southern at 1:30. And at 5:30, the Lady Volunteers face off against the Memphis Tigers. Tickets are available online at columbiatn.com/midstateclassic. Tickets are $10 and good for all three games. The Mid-State Classic, April 2nd. See you at the game.
This is Del Kennedy, Front Porch Radio. Today I am at Foodland in downtown Columbia, Tennessee. I'm talking with Miles Johnson, your hometown grocer here at Foodland. He's got a number of specials here at Foodland this week. A new circular is out with specials here at Foodland, which will run through next Tuesday, which is available in the paper or at the front of the store. Miles Johnson, what's happening in Foodland this week?
Well, this week we have family pack ground beef, $2.99 a pound. Iceberg lettuce, 99 cents each. Folgers coffee, $7.99 each. Kraft cheese, 2 for $5. And Sun Drop 12 packs, 2 for $10.
Awesome. Okay, folks. And as usual, Foodland is the place for guys who grill. They've got the best meat department in Maury County. Miles, have a great week at Foodland.
All righty. Thank you. You too.
Hello, welcome back to Free Your Children. I'm your host, Tiffany Boyd, and we have Connie Regulie with us today as a guest. Connie, I'm so glad to have you here. We've had some exciting, interesting conversation during this show, right?
Yeah, and I would say it's probably one of those conversations that people need to listen to at least twice. So
absolutely.
I hope they have a way to go back and listen again.
They do. This show will be uploaded to the podcast portal at WKOM on Front Porch, and I will provide that link as well. I get that a lot. If they miss it, you know, in real time, then they contact me wanting the link so they can go back. So there will be an availability to do that. And I know that you'll push it out there to your followers as well over on the Family Forward Project. Before we get into this again, tell our listeners where they can find you.
Yes, so my name is Connie Reguli. The last name is spelled R-E-G-U-L-I. I'm on several social media platforms. I'm probably the most active on Facebook, where we also have the Family Forward Project as our group of families. It's about 19,000. I do have a YouTube channel just under my name, Connie Reguli. I have right now about 300 videos up there, primarily dealing with CPS, some of the rallies we do, some of the education that we do. I have done some actual training videos as well. And then occasionally some of the other platforms I will copy over to, like Instagram, X, but generally my name is the easiest way to find me.
Great. And I'll share that information as well. And before we get into the last half of this radio show today, I want to thank Safe Storage for sponsoring today's show. That's safestoragetn.com, and also John Paul Financial Services. And you can reach them as well. I'll have their contact information, but you can reach them at jplivingtn.com, livingtrusttn.com. Thank you again for sponsoring this show. Now, Connie, the last two segments we've gone into detail about what's really going on with CPS or DCS, and then in the school system with the medicalization of our schools that we're facing now. And I want to say that there's a lot of money attached to this, right?
Absolutely.
Let's dig
Absolutely.
Into that. Let's dig
yeah.
into that.
Yeah. So, you know, it does sound like sometimes we're like anti-government. And, you know, I think we got to where we are as you were asking that rhetorical question early
yes.
on.
Yes.
It's partly because we trusted our government, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We trusted people. And actually, as we spend all this time talking about children who are vulnerable, I mean, I have had families who have contacted me, and they actually called Department of Children's Services, because that's what the name is, Department mm-hmm. of Children's Services,
right, yes.
and ask for help with a child who perhaps has autism or mm-hmm. has some learning disability, and then DCS ends up taking their child.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people don't understand, and I have barked about this at the General Assembly many times, and they're finally, some of them are starting to get it a little bit, but I want them to understand the financial incentives mm-hmm. behind what they do.
Right.
Because until we change those financial incentives, it's going to be a tremendous burden. And even though I'm going to tell you that the Title IV-E money out of Washington, D.C., that whole program has actually expired. It expired in September 2023. And as we went to Washington the last time, you know, they threw their hands up and they said, well, we fund expired programs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are other things we're going to have to do on that. But under Title IV-E, which is the foster care money, that's how they get the per diem for the children. And then under ASFA is how they get the adoption money. And I show the legislators a chart, the difference between Title IV-E money and Title IV-B money. And this is Social Security funds, by the way. These are our Social Security dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The Title IV-E money, which is the foster care money, is 10 times that of the Title IV-B money, which is preservation services.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the whole system has now become so privatized that
yes.
we're dealing with an industry that is not unlike so many people have heard about the military-industrialized complex.
Mm-hmm.
They've heard about the privatization of prisons and how it has created an ever burgeoning prison population, which seems to be just, you know, we're the worst in the world
mm-hmm.
as far as we're concerned. So, you know, DCS alone has about 185 vendors. The largest vendors for DCS are private
mm-hmm.
foster care companies.
Right. And they're non-sunshinable, right? I mean, it prevents transparency when you bring in these public-private partnerships.
Well, let me tell you, it's worse than that. It's not only there's no transparency,
mm-hmm.
there's no liability.
Right.
I have actually tried to sue a foster care company one time for abuse that was done by the foster parent, and their defense is they are contract employees,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we don't have any liability for them,
mm-hmm.
and so there's no accountability
right.
as well as no transparency.
Yeah, when I gave my testimony in the House and the Senate, that was one of the things that I brought to the forefront, was that these school choice vouchers are opening up cottage industries with public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. And there is no transparency and there's no accountability, and it really prevents taxpayers from having any representation. And so that's a huge concern. You know, we warned in when they were voting on TISA. You know, I was not for TISA because there's less transparency with TISA than the old BEP funding formula for education. Tell me how TISA plays into this, Connie.
Yeah, well, you're the one who sort of turned me onto that funding source, which I found out that the schools get 25% more if the child is in foster care. And I tell you, I wish I had brought it with me today because I'd like to turn you onto this book. There is a book out there called Injustice Benefits or Justice, Injustice Inc., I think is what it's called. And it is a book written by a professor out of Pennsylvania where he talks about, and as much as I know, my jaw dropped during reading this whole entire book. There's actually a company out there called Justice Benefits Inc. And as soon as the court system gets jurisdiction of a child and gets their social security number and date of birth, governments can send that to this company called Justice Benefits Inc. And they send them a list of all the ways they can make government money on that child.
Wow.
And it's all mercenary. Of course, they get a cut.
Right.
So, you know, it is just endless. And everywhere we turn, our children have become the commodity.
Exactly. They're the cash cows. I've said that over and over again. Tell me, we've talked about this before in previous interviews that we've done together. How much is a child worth to the state if they happen to become adjudicated? And explain what that means briefly.
Okay. So adjudicated means that the judge has found that the child is either dependent or neglected. And then they can make different decisions with the child. They can return the child to the parent. They rarely do. They keep him in DCS custody. Now, this is a very difficult question because children are categorized. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have level one, level two, level three, level four. At the very lowest level, the foster care money is at about not quite $1,000 a month. But remember, the state gets additional administrative funds on top of that. Mm-hmm. At the highest level, a child is worth about $18,000 a month. And I'm going to tell you, that's an old number. That is a number that's about 4 years old, is the last contract that I got a hold of. So it's at about $18,000 a month, and that's just the care money. So you can always add the administrative funds on top of that. Mm-hmm. It's easy to see that a child is worth $100,000 a year at least. And let me just give you an example. DCS says they have 9,000 kids in foster care. Their budget this year is $1.4 billion.
Wow.
So you can do the math on that.
Absolutely. Do we know, do we have any number on how many, do we have any unaccounted for children in DCS custody in Tennessee right now?
Well, good question there, too, because there was a big report that was issued by the U.S. Marshal's Office where they did this whole thing on missing children on over a, let's see, it was about a 25-month period, I think. But I did the math on it and sorted out per year, and there were about 1,600 children per year going missing out of DCS foster care.
Wow. This just is heartbreaking.
And a lot of those are teenagers.
Right.
A lot are teenagers.
Absolutely heartbreaking. What word of advice would you have for parents if they have children in the public school system right now?
Well, and you know, unfortunately today, or so far, we haven't been able to talk about truancy.
Right. I know we ran out of time. We'll have to get you back on
here.
Yeah,
so the truancy is also the DCS grab. But
yes.
You know, if you need help for your child, if you do need help for your child, parenting has become so much more sophisticated. And if you need help for your child, you need to find the right resources to do it and not go to the government.
Absolutely. I want to leave you with this, 2 Timothy 1:7. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. We love you here at Free Your Children, but remember, Jesus loves you so much more. Thank you.
This is Clayton Harris, and you're listening to 101.7 WKOM Columbia.